I'm Floyd Hall, and this is a Wonder Root artist feature. I have the pleasure today of speaking with Atlanta native DJ Speaker Fox. Where did your passion for music come from? Where was that fostered? What was the earliest point that you can remember?
I have actually been interested and been doing music since I was a kid. I remember, and I think most artists have really strong memories on, most artists are pretty emotional. So I remember at a very young age, the way that music made me feel. And, I remember growing up and listening to my mom's music. I remember, like as a kid going to church and listening to the piano, my first favorite song was a Jefferson Starship song. It was called Sarah. And it was when the first music videos came out. And I remember hearing it on TV. And I remember playing my dad's records, his vinyl. And so a lot of my earliest memories are of music, to be honest. I think that I was in a household that wasn't necessarily creative, but it was a household that was very kind of supportive of me finding something that I did well, you know? So my first instrument I played, I was five. My grandfather, he was in the Navy. He taught me how to play the ukulele, and I played it. I picked it up really fast. I was like five or six, and my grandparents had a piano, and I would sit and learn songs and figure out songs and how to play piano by ear. I mean, I still play piano by ear. I remember just being, it was kind of like a game, learning how to, like, songs that I would hear in my head or songs, you know, popular songs, learning how to translate that on different instruments. And, so I would say that, like, really playing instruments, singing, I was in choir at an early age, chorus, school band, all of that led me to, and I was fascinated by owning music because, you know, this was before CDs, so the cassette tapes. I remember, like, recording, you know, the radio on my cassette tapes and, like, making my own tapes, you know, growing up and making tapes for friends and passing them out at school. And so I'd have to say just being exposed to, I mean, my mom listened to James Taylor, Carly Simon, Anita Baker, Al Jarreau, Simply Red, Madonna, lots of 80s pop stuff. But she listened to a lot of soul stuff, too. And then on the radio, you know, I was really influenced by Hot 97 at the time growing up. I remember TLC was one of my first favorite bands. I just remember, like, hearing this music and wanting it for my own. So, and then learning how to play it on instruments. So I collected vinyl, you know, obviously, like, my parents had a vinyl collection. When my parents got divorced, my mom tried to get rid of it, and I, you know, I was really upset about it. You know, I wanted to hold on to it because by then CDs had come out. So I grabbed, like, all the Michael Jackson. I grabbed all the Anita Baker, like, all the Stevie Wonder, all the things that, like, were important to me, the Jefferson Starship. And that's when I first started collecting vinyl. So DJing didn't come till way later. DJing came, I think I got my first set of turntables when I was like 20, about 20, 21. So about 10 years ago, maybe 8 years ago. But growing up, I always was, you know, I think like you, how you talked about you were in camps and stuff like that growing up to stay out of trouble. Well, I did a lot of camps, and so I would always, or after school activities, and music was definitely my favorite one, music and art. Art and music were the most important to me.
When did you know that you were good at being a DJ enough to pursue that? Like, when did that finally click for you, from a passion to a craft to a professional?
I didn't really ever know for sure. And it's still like one of those things. I know that I am a DJ right now, and I'm doing a good job, you know, and there's definitely been, but I've never been like, oh, I'm going to be a DJ. That's it. You know, I kind of have always been an artist growing up that switched mediums or switched principles. And I like that word. And so I think that, I honestly think that there's been signs along the way that has shown me that I'm on the right path. You know, I remember, you know, I got out of jail in 2006 and I was on really strict probation, and I had to only go to work and go to this court mandated, you know, outpatient facility. And then I really couldn't do anything else. I had to go home, you know, and that's when I bought turntables. And so when I would go home, you know, when you're like newly sober and trying to stay on the straight and narrow, like, you know, there's not a lot that I could do with my time. And I didn't have like a car. I didn't have a lot. So, you know, I didn't have ways to go out into the world besides just walking. So I would walk and listen to my headphones, and I would come home and play music. So, you know, I really thought like it was just a goal. Like, I'm going to learn how to DJ. You know, I want to learn. You know, I'd stopped really liking going out and seeing live shows. And I started like appreciating, before I went to jail, going out and seeing DJs. And I was like, oh, I want to learn how to do that, you know. And so I taught myself. Now, there has been signs along the way that have just been like, wow, I cannot believe that happened. Like, I can't, that's crazy. Like, and I think a lot of times, you know, I'm so focused on becoming better that I don't really know that I'm doing a good job until somebody else from the outside tells me or shows me or asks. Like, DJ Nabs is legendary Atlanta DJ, somebody that, you know, I always knew of growing up. And he asked me, you know, the first year or two of DJing, he asked me to DJ at his birthday party at Cascade Roller Skating Rink. And I remember being like, wow, that's insane. DJ Nabs wants me to play, you know? And I was there playing along with all the old school Hot 97 B103 DJs. And there's me, you know. Yellow Wolf asked me to be a part of his crew, Slamerican. And I was like, wow, like that's crazy. Like he's somebody I've known for years, but he wants me to be the only DJ in his, I mean, besides Burn One, in his crew. I remember Don Cannon taking me under his wing and wanting me to go to all of his gigs with him. And he really showed me the ropes of the business. Like, he saw something in me when I first started, you know, and stuff like that. I cannot ever repay. Like, I think that it took other people believing in me to really believe in myself and to get me where I'm at now. I remember the day that I was first on live mixtapes. And I could not believe it. I could not believe it. I was at work. I'm cutting hair. And I'm looking at my Twitter feed in the bathroom. And I'm like, wait a second. What? Like, I'm looking and it looks like, you know, Dope Girl Anthems on live mixtapes. I rush home from work. Like, rush home. You know, because I have to see it to believe it. And I pulled it up on live mixtapes. And there was my mixtape. And, you know, I just cried. I just, like, cried because I couldn't believe that like the small goal had transcended into something that was other people were appreciating. I mean, for me, it was just learning how to DJ and play music that I liked for other people, you know, but it was starting to get attention on a national level. So, anytime I'm booked at South by Southwest, anytime Red Bull or Microsoft or Next, you know, whoever calls me and wants me to play at their event, it really means a lot, because I cannot believe I took this small, like, hobby into something that has become, you know, a brand and a business.
What is your mindset like when you're just playing music around the house for your friends, for your family? Are you less conscious of why you're playing it? Are you playing it because you like that certain bridge in the song that you just like, that it speaks to you? Or are you thinking about, I know Floyd likes this artist, so I have another artist that I think is similar to that he may like, so let me play this other artist that he may sort of dig. Like, what's your perspective on that?
I definitely, if there's anyone around, I have always, always played for them and played what I like, what I think that they will like. I think that that's being a DJ, you know, like, is making connections for that other person. You know, it's kind of codependent. And it is very different than playing music just for myself. Now, it doesn't change much, but there is, like, you are aware of the other person. And, you know, if my mom comes over to my house, or even if my boyfriend comes over to my house, or Floyd, if you come over to my house, I am going to always cater my playlist towards my company, you know? Now, if I'm all alone, I feel totally at peace. I'm just playing for me, and I'm way more relaxed. I think that I grew up in a home. I think that, I don't know if every DJ is like that, but I grew up in a home with an alcoholic father. And so one of the things that I had to do as a kid growing up is when I would walk into a room, I had to kind of read the temperature of the room and adjust my behavior and the way that I acted around the temperature of the room. So if he was angry or if he was happy, like, and so I learned this sixth sense of, like, learning how to read nonverbal clues from a person and really, like, feel out a person, which in the long term has really helped me as a DJ, you know? I can read people and I'm very observant. But, yeah, and so, like, I will always have that switch that I can turn on and off. Now, for myself, I just play what I like, and it's very – I mean, it will go all over the place, you know? But for myself, I mean, I listen to all different types of music, but typically when I'm alone, I mean, it depends on the mood. I listen to a lot of reggae, a lot of old, dub and reggae, and I listen to a lot of, like, old hip-hop. I love Common. I love Outkast. I listen to a lot of Sade. I listen to things that, like, bring me peace at the time, you know? And I listen to a lot of current hip hop, but it, you know, I'm kind of all over the place. That is definitely a switch that I have. So,
in being so aware of the temperature in the room, on the flip side, how self-aware are you?
How self
and taking your own temperature, if you will, like understanding where you are.
Well, I've become very self-aware in the last, I would say, 7 years. So I am pretty good at knowing where I'm at. There are times when I can kind of get numb or tired or and I know that when I switch on music, I start to feel, and then I can kind of gauge where I'm at. Music's a kind of way for me to check into myself. So does that make sense?
It does. It does. What's your perspective of the role of the DJ as someone who is curating music, who is finding music, who is investigating, sort of keeping the keeper of the flame, if you will, of the musical landscape? How has that changed for you in this digital era that we're in right now?
Well, you know, I came up at a very interesting time, because it was when technology and DJing was starting to... When I started playing gigs, it's when Serato, everybody had just started using Serato. So before that, you know, I had collected vinyl and I had had vinyl and you would have to save up money. And it was a very serious, like, am I going to buy a new pair of shoes or am I going to buy the new Dilla album? You know, like, it was a very, like, it was an investment. Nowadays, things are, and it's not saying that they're bad, but they're a lot easier. I just played an all vinyl gig on Halloween where all the DJs had to play like an all vinyl set. And so like I had to go through my vinyl, plan what I was going to bring. And there's a lot more. It reminded me like it used to be a lot different, you know? It is way easier now. And it made me really realize what I see and hear a lot of, and I mean, have understood a lot of the older DJs complain about, that DJing is something that everybody can do now because all they have to do is have a laptop and a program and, you know, you can download a lot of music for free. So the ability to be a DJ isn't as difficult anymore. I mean, anybody can do it. Will you go back to the original question?
Well, let's stay right there, actually, because yeah, with the access and the ease of, let's say, having the setup, has the art or has the craft sort of moved into how to bring all of that together? Because still, you have to understand the music, I'm assuming. There still is some sense of history, of understanding how to present the music. Is that where the craft has sort of converged to, even as the access has gotten a lot more open to everyone?
It's really hard to say because I'm in the middle of it, and it's hard to say from my perspective, like, to look at it from an outside perspective. What I can say is that I think originality, because it is so easy for everybody to, or for more people to become a DJ, which isn't a bad thing, I think originality and knowing, like having a broader music knowledge is going to be way more important than it was in the past for you to stand out, you know, because that's the key, right? You don't want to sound just like everybody else. You want to stand out. And so bringing your personal experiences to the turntables and bringing the music that you grew up on, the music that you grew up on and the music that's the most important to you is what you're going to play the best. And how you mix that and play for the audience is also like a component in it. But I think that DJs have to stand apart and they have to build a brand. You know, they have to build an image. They have to, because now it's not like you don't have to just go to somebody's set to learn about them. Like there's SoundCloud, there's your Facebook fan page, there's Twitter, there's Instagram, there's all this social networking. So the way that you curate, this is why I think Trinidad James blew up here in Atlanta, is because it's not that Trinidad James just had the single All Gold Everything. He had an image that went behind it and the timing was perfect. You know, like Atlanta needed that, like an emerging young artist that looked different, that didn't look like a tip, that didn't look like a B.O.B., you know, somebody that's different to come out and to rise above. And he had everything. He has a tight brand. And when I talk about brand, I'm not, that's, you know, the nature of the beast is, yeah, you're an artist, but you're also a business. So how's your business, what are the different components? What are the strengths of your business? And definitely the most important part, yes, is your skills. I know a lot of DJs that are well known that don't know how to mix, that do not know how to mix. And it's just based on their look and it's just based on their selection. But technically, they're not great DJs. Trinidad James, who is a friend of mine, 10 years ago, would have never blown up the way he did. due to technology and the internet and everybody being more accessible, somebody that just learned how to rap 3 months prior would never have blown up. You know, like you had to earn your keep. Now it's not that way. It's really, we live in a society, I think, where it's short-term based and it's very, very ADD culture. So if you put together the right, you know, the right kind of like ingredients, it will make for a decent brand. But what I think is the most important part is the passion and the longevity, like for the longevity of you as a DJ is like you actually knowing the skills that we talked about earlier, you know, like how to play for the crowd, how to also play music that you love, and how to kind of, I think the most important part is mixing in the music that makes up who you are and your soul in with the night, you know, and mixing that in a way that like it's still, it doesn't kill the night, you know, everybody makes money, everybody's happy, but like you're still being able to express where you're at the time. You know, that's my favorite part about DJing is some days when I'm having a bad day, I get up there and I tell it through music, you know, but I can't go up there and play Sade all night because I'm sad. I have to go up there and learn how to like build it up, drop Soldier of Love, like get that feeling out, then go back into Mobb Deep and then, you know, start feeling a little bit better because I'm doing well. And, you know, like it is, it's therapy for me, you know, and, you know, I've heard the quote before that a good DJ gets up on the turntables and just bleeds, you know, and I think that that's very true. And I think that I put a lot of myself in my sets, you know, and I think it just makes it worth it, you know.
What is the best decision that you've ever made?
I think I would have to say two. One is knowing that my artistic, what I value is beautiful, whether it's music or art, knowing that it has value and standing behind it my whole life. I think every artist has a story to tell or a song to play, and their whole life is a struggle to get that story out or to get that music that they were born with inside out. And I've kind of had a music inside of me that wasn't always valued, you know? It wasn't, I remember when I first started DJing, I remember encountering a lot of racism when I would play at kind of upscale bottle bars. And I remember not liking it. I remember standing behind the music that I valued the most. And I've always stood behind it. And now I think that it's like, it's popular. I think not changing yourself for the benefit of other people is one of the best decisions I've made. Because I think I've been fortunate enough to make a living off of it. And it's just me, you know? And then I would have to say the other would be staying sober. I got sober in 2006 or 2007. And, you know, I don't know if I'll be sober forever, but I had to get off of, I had to quit drinking and quit smoking weed and, you know, get off of everything in order to focus. And, I mean, because the court was making me do that. But I stuck with it and I wanted it. And I was able to, because of sobriety, kind of find my path. And, you know, I don't know if it will be that way forever, but for right now, it's working for me.
Did you want to be sober before you went to jail?
No, absolutely not.
Absolutely not?
No. I never knew that drugs and alcohol were the problem. They were my music. That's how I, like, coped with life, and that's how I dealt with things. That was what was modeled to me growing up. It was something that my dad did. It was, so to me, that was never the problem. You know, the problem was, you know, the situations. It was that, you know, the hard times, that, you know, it was my dad leaving. It was my family and me getting estranged. It was, you know, violent things that happened. It was, you know, that we got robbed. It was, you know, all these things that happened. And those things did happen. But if I was, I knew that when I went to jail, I spent enough time in there that, like, I started, like, appreciating, like, oh, I feel good. Like, I feel good. Like, the sun is coming up. I appreciate the sun. You appreciate the little things in life that when you're on drugs or you're not, or you're absent, like, you're not really there for the sunrise. Like, when the sun comes up, you're mad. You know, I don't get that way anymore. The morning is very special to me, you know? It's a very spiritual time of day for me. And, it's when I meditate, it's when I run. But no, I mean, I was filled with a lot of pain before I went to jail. And, you know, to be honest, like, I wasn't a bad person. I did a lot of bad things, but I was just doing the best I could with what I had been given in life, you know? And that's all that is. I think that's what everybody's trying to do. I don't think anybody wants to end up in jail, but some people are just, that's all that you were given, you know? And that's all, that's the best I could do with the hand that I was dealt. And I think jail was the best thing that ever happened to me. I think turning myself in to the bounty hunter was the best thing, another great decision. They lost my case while I was in jail, so I ended up staying in there for several months, and I was able to get sober, stay sober. And, you know, when I got out, I wanted to not miss out on life anymore. You know, growing up, I had a lot of dreams, and I knew that if I was going to keep doing what I had been doing, that I was going to die with my music still inside of me. And that is, I think, something that I've always been scared of.
You mentioned encountering some racism.
Mm-hmm.
You are a white woman.
Mm-hmm.
What's been the bigger challenge for you, racism or genderism?
You know what? To be honest, Floyd, I don't think music is starting to not have a color anymore. That's one of the benefits of the internet and everybody being exposed to everything. There are some downsides to that, but I grew up in a very diverse city. I grew up in a very diverse school. Growing up, we had the M2M program. So although I grew up near Phipps Plaza area, like Sandy Springs, Sydney Marcus area. My school was mostly kids from College Park because they had the busing program. So I am used to being around a lot of different culture, and that's just became the norm for me. So when I went, and I've always had a diverse group of friends. I was blessed enough to be able to go to Paideia and for the last couple of years of high school. And it was a school that I did not encounter as much racism and classism at. I mean, a lot of the kids there were rich, and I definitely did not go to an Ivy League school like all my classmates. But they taught a very open program, and I was very blessed to go there and felt very fortunate. I think that's a great school, and I hope that they still are giving scholarships to kids that can't afford it. Now, when it came to me DJing, I know that I have a very large variety in the music that I play. It's very diverse. And I know that if I looked at myself as somebody that was, if I took being white or being a female as something that was a weakness, I wasn't ever going to succeed. So instead of really ever seeing that, what I did was instead like thought about how it could make me stand out and how it could, you know, help me because I don't really blend in or I didn't really blend in when I first started DJing. So I've really not viewed it as a weakness. I've really viewed it as a strength. And I think the people, I have a diverse group of friends and, you know, that hang out with a diverse group of friends. I am blessed with a very interesting tribe, whether it's from Heroes and Villains to Gangsta Boo, 3-6, Drumma Boy, Coach K, Brittany Bosco. I have a Cole from Black Lips. I have a group of peers, DiBiase, Reed De La Vega, Fresh I Am, a bunch of kids that don't really fit in anywhere. I think that's what Yellow Wolf's crew, Slim American, was all about, is like, we don't fit in, you know? And guess what? That is, they have a slogan that's the losers win again. And it's like, it's kind of all about that. That's what Slim American is all about. It's like, well, we don't fit in and we don't give a fuck. And that's the kind of punk rock aesthetic, I think, behind it. And that's something that growing up, I played in a lot of punk rock bands. I listened to a lot of punk and oi music. And it's just a kind of I don't give a fuck attitude. Like, I'm going to do it anyway, you know? I'm going to see how far I can take this. I think growing up, I would learn things out of spite of people because people told me that I couldn't, you know? And it just made me, it fueled me to want to do it more. Does that make sense?
As an Atlanta native, what does this city mean to you?
Atlanta is a place that growing up, I did not like living here. I felt like a small town. I felt very stifled. I felt very oppressive. Now, I grew up in a mostly Jewish neighborhood, and I went to a very mixed school when I was in public school. And I encountered a lot of racism and classism, and I did not like Atlanta. I thought that was Atlanta, you know. When I moved into Little Five Points in high school and I started before that, I found Atlanta more tolerable through art, the art scene, through going to shows, but I hated Atlanta. I hated it. And, you know, growing up, I wanted to go to college. I'd always planned on going to art school in New York. And I applied when it was time to go to college. I applied to all the art schools. I got in. I got scholarships. Like, I was going to be an artist in New York. Well, I think it just didn't click that, like, that takes money to go to out of school. And so I was able to go to either Agnes Scott. My family was like, you can go to Agnes Scott or you can go to UGA. So that meant, like, I was not going to leave Atlanta. And both of those schools, I had hope and I had, you know, it was totally paid for. And due to academia and my art stuff. But, I mean, I got into Pratt and Parsons and SVA. I mean, I'm still a little upset about it, to be honest. And I was pissed. I wanted to get out of Atlanta. Atlanta felt small. Even though I'd moved downtown and, you know, the education at Paideia helped me, but I just felt like I had started surrounding myself with like-minded people around that time. And I had found, you know, because I did not like Atlanta, I had found things and I'd fallen into, like, subcultures that were inspiring or interesting to me, whether it was going to like, you know, DIY shows or hardcore shows or punk rock shows or going to after hours or going to art shows. And I'd gotten really into art because I did not like my environment. I don't know. I think Atlanta really broke me down and life broke me down. Like, I went to college for a couple of years. Some hard stuff happened. I mean, from like in a 10-year span, some hard stuff happened. And, you know, I just started partying more. And I, you know, like I said earlier, like I ended up in jail. And I bring that up often because it was a time in my life where I was reborn. And it was really cold. I was locked up in January and I got out in March or April, like right at the beginning of April. And it was, I mean, some people have to go to rehab, and that was my rehab. And I was downtown at the Atlanta City Detention Center. And I watched the trains every day from my room, from my cell. And I started remembering that my life had a purpose. And I started really appreciating the landscape of Atlanta. And then I got out of jail and I didn't have a car and I had to take MARTA. And I had too much pride to take the bus. So I would walk from my apartment to the MARTA station. And then I would take MARTA to my job, which was up in Buckhead. And then I would take MARTA after I got off work to up to like Perimeter Mall area. But this whole time I would ride MARTA and see the landscape and I would listen to music. And it, something happened the years that I got on drugs and I kind of got absent from like the Atlanta scene or whatever. And something happened to Atlanta as far as it growing and people starting to move in town and it feeling like a city. And then something happened to me spiritually and emotionally where it became a landscape and it felt like a familiar landscape that felt like home. And it became more, became something that I appreciated, you know? I started to realize the things that I loved about this city. I think that's what happens anytime this city raised me, you know? Like, I think that happens anytime, like, somebody becomes an adult, they appreciate certain things about their parents that they didn't appreciate before, you know? There is so much of Atlanta that shaped me into who I am today, and that, you know, I've gotten the chance to, you know, move to New York, to move to L.A., I don't really want to leave here because so much of what I do is influenced by where I came from, by what's going on here right now. Atlanta, and a lot of my friends that did move away are now moving back because Atlanta's really an epicenter for the music industry. I have been blessed enough to be able to travel a lot as a DJ in the last couple years. To play a lot of gigs out of town. I do a radio show in New York. I've done festivals, playing out of town gigs. And I always get more and more happy to come home. It's easy here and it is home. It's just easy here. I love going, I go to New York often and there's a, like a sigh of relief when I come back here. I love it.
What did it mean to you when the Office of Cultural Affairs in the mayor's office asked you to play for the Elevate Atlanta programming? What did that mean? As all of what you just said, given what Atlanta means to you, what did that mean to you in that moment?
Sorry. Like I said earlier, sometimes you don't realize like stuff like that until somebody points it out, you know? You don't realize how big that is until somebody says it or somebody points it out. It meant a lot. I mean, I had the flu. I was sick with the flu, like super sick, and I was not going to miss that gig. I had to work that day with the flu. And I went to go DJ after work, and then I had to DJ my normal Friday night at El Bar. It means a lot. There was a couple moments where I teared up because I was in the middle of downtown Atlanta, and I was being paid by the city to play music, and the music was echoing through, like, throughout the buildings, and it was, like, bouncing off the walls, and there was this beautiful Ferris wheel, you know, going, and there was this beautiful group of people that were there, and they just, when I dropped, I played some real Atlanta music. I played a little bit of everything. I played, there's some older people there, so we played a little Marvin Gaye, and we played a little Stevie Wonder, but there was a couple points where I had to drop Rosa Parks. Like, I had to drop Goody Mob. You know, I had to drop, like, a couple songs that are just Atlanta. I dropped Bombs Over Baghdad. And the feeling, like, the weather was perfect that day. And, you know, my buddy Genesis was playing with me. And the feeling of pride that I got when I got to drop those songs and have, like, that moment, it was amazing. I was really, really touched, obviously, and really honored to be asked to do that on a symbolic level. It really meant a lot. I think that, you know, when you're an addict, I think that you live your life on what you can get from other people. So it's been very rewarding as somebody that's sober in the city that they grew up in, learning how I can give back. And wanting to bring back to the city, you know? That's why I don't want to ever leave. Now, I might go to Europe and do a little year or two in Paris, but I will always have a home here in Atlanta, you know? And I think that's part of becoming a leader is, you know, for years being an artist, like, you know, you get inspired, you go to different events. But as you get older, one of the pleasures that I've found in getting older in Atlanta is, you know, wanting to build, continue to build and to maintain, like, the artistic, to maintain, like, what made Atlanta special, to bring new, fresh breath to Atlanta, but to also, like, pay homage to what made it special, because it's so special. It's such a special place. And everybody that comes here says that. Atlanta, and I am not just saying this because I'm a DJ, every single DJ loves to play in Atlanta. And they all say it hands down because we get so into it, you know? It's so exciting for DJs that are on tour. Diplo was the one that said it most recently. He played at Tomorrow World, and he played at the Mad Decent Block Party at the Masquerade. And the whole crowd just starts chanting ATL ho. And he's just like, I didn't even like get them to do this. Is so crazy. You know, like, we have so much pride, and I think we have a reason to have so much pride. You know, I mean, we used to be the end of the train stop. You know, we were terminus city, just the end of the train stop. Nothing. Nobody thought about us. But then we got voices like Kilo Ali. We got voices like Goody Mob. We got voices like Andre Benjamin and Big Boy, and we got real strong voices coming out of Atlanta musically that made us grow, you know.
DJ Speaker Fox, let all of our listeners know how they can get in contact with you or find you in this social world that we're in right now. Give all of your information.
I hate doing this. It feels like I'm just listing things. So my name is Speaker Fox, and that's one word, Speaker, F-O-X-X-X, so three X's. My SoundCloud for all my mixtapes that I do is soundcloud.com/speakerfox. My Facebook page is Speaker Fox, one word, three X's. My Twitter is at SpeakerFox, but my Instagram is at DJ SpeakerFox. And that is how you can find me.
DJ SpeakerFox, thank you.
Thank you so much. I appreciate it.